I'm Russell Rowland, author of 56 Counties, A Montana Journey. Welcome to 56 Counties.
I am happy to welcome my friend Megan Torgerson, who is the host of a very, very high quality podcast called Reframing Rural. And it's just nice to talk to you, Megan. Let's start off by you talking about, so you grew up near Dagmar up in the northeast corner of Montana. Tell me about how that was and how it shaped you as a person and as a, just the way you look at the world.
Yeah, thanks so much for that question, Russell, and for having me on. So as you mentioned, I grew up in the far northeast corner of the state, and we farmed and ranched in Montana and North Dakota, since we're so close. Mm. And we're a cow-calf operation and dryland wheat farm, and it's been in the family for more than 100 years. My family came from Norway and Denmark and Germany to the area, and it really, you know, instilled in me the things that I'm sure you've heard from other guests who grew up in agriculture, ethic of hard work, and really had an important emphasis on the family, and a spirit of entrepreneurship, which I think is present in a lot of rural communities. And that's definitely a part of my work, and, you know, saw my dad and my forefathers working for themselves, and it's something that I enjoy today. But just as anybody, I, you know, have kind of a complicated relationship with where I'm from as well. And, you know, I loved my early years getting to run around and play on a farm and ranch. But then as I grew older, I was really also realizing how deeply patriarchal Eastern Montana can be. And I'm not going to say that that's how it is in every rural community in that part of the state. But really, I felt that the importance was always placed on the men and their work, and women were seen a little bit as secondary to that work, honestly. And for example, some of my aunts, you know, they never saw a baby calf being born, but the, you know, they were less than a football field away from that happening. And I think there, you know, people maybe didn't take the time to teach me how to drive some farm equipment that they might have otherwise had I been born a boy. And I've just been thinking about those things more recently in becoming a mom, and thinking about what skills do I want to impart to my son. I don't have a daughter, but it still makes me think about those things. Also, as someone who grew up in Eastern Montana, there was always things going on in places like Missoula, or places outside of the community that I grew up in. So I really kind of grew up with this feeling like I was on the edge of the world a little bit, and just excited to kind of get out. And I think, you know, I learned in doing the work I do with rural storytelling that's, you know, a lot of rural kids that have that experience. They're kind of told that in order to make something of their lives, they have to leave their rural communities. And, you know, I don't think that's true, but it was definitely kind of the narrative that I was driven by. And so I left for bigger cities and pursued a life outside of agriculture, and then kind of came full circle and have started telling stories about family agriculture here recently too. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into that, but I just wanted to mention, so yeah, even when I look at my family history, you know, the you're talking about the patriarchal part of it. My grandparents' generation, there were three boys and two girls in that family. And when the ranch was handed down, it was just split up among the boys. The girls weren't involved in that. So, but yeah, it's just not that long ago that it was, you know, totally ruled by the male presence. So
I used to maybe think, oh, maybe that's just how things were here in the U.S., but like primogeniture, or the practice of passing down land to the firstborn son, is something that people practice in Norway. And so I kind of think that those settlers brought that way of viewing things into a new country, and then it's just a culture that continued. But I'm seeing it change now too, and, you know, with some of the stories I'm telling today, women are taking over too.
You started the podcast, what, like 4 or 5 years ago? And what inspired you to do that? You were living in Seattle at the time, right?
Yeah, so I started in 2019, but the first seed of the idea really started in 2016, around the first Trump election. And I was really, I was living in Asheville, North Carolina at the time, actually. And then I moved to Seattle for grad school. But when I applied to grad school, I was kind of thinking about stories that I wanted to tell about rural communities. And the impetus really was too, because I was seeing a lot of stories in the news about rural as being, you know, completely red, as all rural Americans must be Trump voters. And I knew that that wasn't the case. And I never sought to do anything really political with the podcast. And I really, the whole first season and, you know, many of all of the episodes that follow are kind of in response to the rural story being overly politicized. But I did go in with that idea of, hey, that's not the case for all rural Americans, you know, like there's a strong communist history with where I grew up in Dagmar, like the book Red Corner that you've done an episode on, you know, our neighbors to the east in North Dakota, there was this movement called the Nonpartisan League, and they sought parity so that farmers and rural residents would earn the same income as people in urban America. And so we have of you know, a history in rural America that isn't just Trump politics. And so I wanted to kind of share stories that weren't just about politics, but that, yeah, kind of transcended that.
So talk to me about when you first started. How did you decide to approach it, as far as you have a different theme for each season? How did that come about?
The first season, and I decided to do a story, the whole season set in my hometown. Just like, what a good place to start would be where I grew up. And then the second season, the pandemic hit, and so I shifted to doing all remote interviews. And I had just finished grad school, and I really wanted to continue learning. And so I interviewed a wide gamut of rural entrepreneurs and sociologists and leaders. And then in the third season, I kind of drilled down to being a little more issue specific and covered like food sovereignty, regenerative agriculture, rural gentrification, and really started kind of telling more stories about agriculture leading up to season four, which is all about succession stories. So family farm and ranch succession, and Winnet Aces, the amazing rancher-led nonprofit in Winnet, they approached me with the idea for season four because I had told the story of my family's farm and ranch transition in season three, and then I'd also done a story in Winnet, and it was really a fun story, kind of a tapestry of many people who have worked on that nonprofit and have been part of a lot of amazing community vitality efforts. And they just asked, hey, what do you think about doing a whole story about a whole season, based on farm and ranch succession? And I thought, why not? And so we collaborated on identifying the guests. And I've just learned so much more about that topic in interviewing other families and hearing how they do it. And everybody does it differently. So
I enjoyed that episode a lot. And I know a lot of those people, too. Thankfully, somebody introduced me to that group, but so that was a great episode. But I also loved, one of my favorite episodes was the punk rock rancher.
Yeah, John Wicks. So, he's become a friend.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So talk to me about how you find the people that you want to talk to.
That's a great question. It's, well, for the first season, I'll have to give my mom credit for helping me come up with the folks from Dagmar to interview.
Oh.
But this last season, Winnet, Aces, and I, we knew the family from Malta through a succession stories live storytelling event that Winnet Aces did, the Hammonds. And then I reached out to Gene Curry because of his work with the Stockgrowers Association and Montana Department of Livestock. And I found the Fritz family in season four through John Wicks, the story of a punk rock farmer from season three. And then Sig Pugrud from Winnet in season four. She's a board member with Winnet Aces. And the Brewski family came through a collaboration with the World Wildlife Fund. So I had talked to them about interviewing a rancher who's involved in one of their regenerative and sustainable programs. And so they put me in touch with the Brewskis, who understand are your relatives or somewhat related.
Shirt tail, nice. Yes. Sonia Brewski is a cousin to a cousin kind of thing, you know.
Cool.
So, yeah, since my mom grew up in Ekalaka, of course, there's a connection there.
Nice.
So one of the things that was interesting to me about your succession stories was that a lot of these people showed a lot more flexibility than I would have expected from a ranch family. You know, just having grown up in a ranch family, I know how there is just such a strong tendency to always do some things the same way. There's also a strong tendency to not discuss things that need to be discussed. So it was really cool to hear some of these families talk about how they really had to force themselves to sit down and have these really difficult conversations.
Yeah, I was emailing with an editor of a weekly newspaper in Montana, and he asked, how did you get anyone to participate in this season? Because it's
That's
just
a
not
a great question.
yeah, it's just not something that people talk about, like, traditionally, conventionally, let alone with a microphone in front of you.
Yeah, so openly.
Yeah, but we really lucked out, and people were really candid and vulnerable, and that's my greatest gift of the work that I get to do, is hearing people's stories and letting them open up. But yeah, I feel like more often than not, probably, I feel like people do have the tendency to follow in their forefathers' footsteps, and kind of, they might be pressured into or doing things the way that have always been done, or that's just what's worked for them. But it was really a great surprise to learn, you know, how the Brewskis are doing things. And they were a farm and ranch in Ekalaka, Montana, but the farming really wasn't working for them. They were having to haul their grain to Pompey's Pillar, more than 200 miles away, I believe.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And 1 year they had such bad drought and hail that they only hauled 4 semi-loads of grain off of the place. And so they really had to make a change. And one of the things I really appreciated about interviewing Ryan Brewski, who's taking over the farm and ranch, now it's a ranch. So they reseeded all of the farm ground back into grass. And so they're just raising cattle. But he really recognized that, you know, I'm not going to blame my ancestors for doing things how they did. Everybody did what they needed to do to get by at that time, but it just wasn't working for us now. And so he studied under Gabe Brown, who is the North Dakota farmer famous for a Netflix documentary that's narrated by Woody Harrelson. And he wrote the book Dirt to Soil. And he came back to Ekalaka with ideas of how they might better sustain their ranch for the long term and have this beautiful stand of grass that I got to see now. And they're so successful that they now hire 8 employees.
Wow.
Yeah. Some are local, some are through the H2A program and are South Africans, but they're just killing it. And they also, Ryan's wife, Abby, is just a force to be reckoned with. And she really encouraged everybody to create a succession plan. And shout out to Ryan's parents, Joe and Sonia, who you're Shirttail relatives to, for really being open to the idea of changing how things were done on the ranch. It's really cool to talk to them about how they were open to change and what that looks like.
Yeah. So another interview that really struck me was there, and I'm going to forget the name, but you can probably guess who I'm talking about, was the family where the father was, he had to admit that he was, had always had a tendency to rule with an iron fist, and he really had to back off of that and, again, sit down and have some really honest conversations with his 2 sons and his wife about how they were going to proceed. You know who I'm talking about, I assume.
Yes, that would be Gene Curry, the past president of the Stock Growers Association. And it was wonderful to interview him and get to know him more. I really thought, like I share in the narration of that episode, that he was going to be like a really stoic, not really forthcoming about his process. And I kind of viewed him as like this Clint Eastwood cowboy or the Marlboro Man of Montana, I think is what I called him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he came full circle, and he realized that episode is called My Way or the Highway, and that's kind of how he used to govern on the ranch. But he realized that if he was going to continue to rule with an iron fist, that he was just going to drive his son away, who's taking over. And so he worked with a succession facilitator out of AgWest Farm Credit. And that facilitator had Gene and the entire family take personality tests. To figure out. And the label of his personality was like a dominant personality.
Yeah.
And he realized he had to change his ways in order to have constructive conversations with his family and secure the transition of the ranch. And he did that because that was the most important thing to him, was keeping his family together and then next keeping the ranch together. So really a story of personal transformation.
Yeah, totally. So another thing that you address quite a bit are the mental health issues that are really a huge problem and have been for pretty much since people settled here. So talk to me about some of the most powerful stories you've heard about that issue.
I think the episode I've done that's addressed it most specifically in trying to highlight resources was a interview that I did during season 3 with Dr. Allison Brennan, who is the designated mental health specialist with MSU Extension, and not all states have that. So I think it really speaks to the need that we have in Montana for a position like that, given, you know, Montana has for more than 30 years had one of the highest suicide rates in the country. Mm-hmm. And mental health so far in these 5 core stories for season 5 hasn't been really specifically talked about. But I was speaking to a therapist who has listened to these stories, and she works in Montana, and she was really sharing how great of a resource it is for families to listen to these conversations, not just so that they can work on their succession plan, but also because it touches on the real challenges of working with family and working in an industry that is becoming increasingly more difficult to work on. You know, I've heard people say that things are almost looking worse than they did in the 1980s farm crisis.
Wow.
And so it's really important that we have open conversations with our family and that we talk about mental health. And one of the interviews that I did was with Jake Fritz from Chester, Montana, and he is a 6th generation Montana farmer and rancher. And I asked him, like, what does it mean to be to continuing on your family's legacy? And I was really glad that he was honest. And, you know, I kind of expected for him to say, oh, it's such a great honor. But I know he believes that. But he also said it comes with an incredible amount of pressure. And just for him to be that forthcoming with me was really a gift. And he said he talks to his wife about it. But I know that comes with a lot of challenges to take over as a 6th generation.
I was going to follow up with mentioning my friend Courtney Kibblewhite, because I know you talked to her too. I know she's doing a lot of really great work as far as telling stories about people in rural communities that have struggled with mental health issues. And she's very open about her own issues too. So,
yes, she was in that same episode that Dr. Allison Brennan was in. Thank you so much for mentioning her efforts as well with Beyond the Weather. She's doing such an instrumental job. And I'm going to have a couple extra bonus episodes for season 4 coming out that directly touch on mental health, as well as in interviewing producers for the last 5 or so years. I've really heard from people, you know, struggling with substance abuse issues or having suicidal ideation. So I've really try to make more of a point in recent seasons to touch on that subject. But I'll be interviewing Joe Wilkins, who wrote the 2024 Montana Book Award winning author behind The Entire Sky. And his book really touches on suicide in rural communities and rigid expectations of manhood. And then Sterling Drake, he's a Phillipsburg-based musician who's using his album that came out in 2025 to raise awareness about mental health support in agricultural communities. So really, those episodes will be coming out this spring, and trying to share more resources like Beyond the Weather and others that are happening in the West for producers.
Have you ever connected with Amber? I can't think of her last name, but she lives in Big Timber, and she started the organization that provides resources for people that want to make connections in their communities for
Catalyst for Change.
Yeah, thank you. She's great. I interviewed her for the radio show.
Yeah.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amber Martinson Blake, I believe.
Right.
I interviewed her for a needs assessment I did for the Red Ants Pants Foundation. She's amazing. I love the work that they're doing.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you've become a mother, and you've also been diagnosed with an autoimmune disease since you started the podcast. So how has that affected your ability to do this work?
Those are great questions that I don't often get, so I'm excited to explore them. I'll answer the first one about becoming a mom first. I think it's made me a better storyteller. I was talking to my story editor, Mary Ald, about this last year, and I feel like it's made me a little bit more empathetic and just thinking through the listener experience a little bit more closely and thinking about pacing and what I want to say and how I want to say it in the writing. And I feel first and foremost like a writer. Reframing Rural is a heavily narrated show, and so I like getting that space to think about how other people will receive it. I think I'm doing that more as a mom. But I have two autoimmune conditions, actually. I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's a few years after starting the podcast, and autoimmune conditions, as I understand them, you have to carry the gene, and then a certain event kind of needs to turn the light switch on of that gene. And then the thing with autoimmune conditions is you can never really turn them off. And so depending on what you have, you know, a certain body part will kind of like, or system will attack itself. So I was working really, really hard to start Reframing Rural, and I was grant writing as well and working on other consulting projects to try to build up the podcast in the first few years, and working just an unhealthy amount. And that's when I started to get sick. And then last year I found out that I have Crohn's disease, which is really much worse.
Yeah,
than
I've heard of that.
I think I've been living with it for probably 5 years, probably for that same time that I started the project, but just got the diagnosis recently. But for last year, I was really sick for the beginning half of the year, and so was having a hard time showing up fully to my work. And so the editing got really pushed back. And so this season 4 was a huge push at the end to get everything out in time before the end of the year, because I was kind of out of commission for the first part of the year. But I've been working with a naturopath and the only functional gastroenterologist in the state, and a functional nutritionist, and investing a lot of time and energy to healing my gut, and also kind of trying to not work every hour, every waking hour of every day, which is something that I saw, on my farm and ranch growing up. A lot of us have seen that modeled for us by our parents.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I need to look out for my health if I want to keep doing these things. So it's been a huge lesson, really, of trying to get towards an equilibrium of a little bit of a work-life balance, because otherwise I won't be able to keep doing the work that I love if I'm really sick. So.
Oh, so I wanted to ask you about your documentary, too.
Yeah, so I have a documentary along with Zach Altman, a fellow co-producer and director, Anthony Pavkovich, that just made it into the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival.
Awesome.
I'm so excited about it. 10 years ago, the last time I lived in Missoula, I volunteered at the festival. And so to have that film premiere in a community that I respect so deeply, and in such a premier Western, the U.S. documentary festival, is really amazing. But Zach and Anthony invited me to be part of the project when I was still living in Seattle, is when we got started on it at the beginning of 2023. And it follows two amazing mothers and women in ranching. Amber Smith, who is the co-director of the amazing nonprofit Women in Ranching, and Jamie Stoltzvis. She's from Big Timber, and she has the meat label Cowgirl Meat Company. And Amber lives in Cohagen, so just outside of Miles City. But, thinking about growing up and maybe not seeing very many women leading their farm and ranch. I never saw that growing up. To seeing these two women who are really innovating. So what their partnership looks like and what the film explores, along with how mothering and motherhood has changed them as ranchers, is the partnership that they have. So Amber, on the plains of eastern Montana, is raising cow-calf pairs and then sending those calves over to Jamie's. And she's in the Absaroka Mountains and has amazing grasslands where these cattle are grass-finished and then ultimately sold through her meat label. So they're really like circumnavigating the big four meat packers and, receiving more of the profits and growing just amazing beef. Just like the nutritional value of their beef and the flavor is amazing. So that's kind of what the film explores is, you know, they're first generation ranchers also. And I think like not being born into agriculture has freed them up to think differently about how their approach to it too. So I'm just so honored to be part of that project. And having worked in exclusively writing and in audio, it's really crazy to see what goes into video. It's been a great experience.
Probably a lot different. So tell me about season 5. Do you have a theme yet lined up?
Yeah, we've actually already started reporting on season 5, and that theme is rural motherhood. So it's very fitting to the film. I didn't know that when we started the film project that would be Reframing Rural's next season, but it really, the inspiration came from having my son and wanting to talk to other mothers and really gaining a lot more respect for my mom and the work that she did raising us, in frontier Montana with my dad working long hours to support us during the day. And it's just given me so much more respect for mothers in agriculture. And this season isn't just for, you know, moms working in agriculture. It really explores the experience of rural motherhood in general. But the reporting we've done so far for the season, we went to Dillon, my story editor Mary and I, and did reporting on childcare in Beaverhead County, which is the geographically largest county, as you know, in Montana. So some people are having to travel, you know, an hour plus one way for childcare. And then just looking at like the economic impacts of childcare as well. And then I went to the Red Ants Pants Foundation has a retreat called Women in Ag Wellbeing. And I got to attend that in November. And that episode will really look at maternal mental health and farm stress and how women are resourcing themselves in a very stressful industry and finding community amid isolation and the various stressors in agriculture. Mm.
So has this impacted your relationship with your own family? I would imagine it has, all this work.
Yeah, I feel like it's been really fun to bring my parents into the fold. I was realizing going to Ekalaka, I went with my parents and my son Connor, who was a year old at the time. Yeah, and they watched Connor while I was doing interviews, and then they got to meet the Bruschi family as well. And we did some things with them, went to the park, went to this cool church service where they were singing bluegrass songs and playing guitar. I think they called it cowboy church. But it made me think like agriculture is really a family driven operation. Family agriculture is. And I kind of feel like my work is starting to be too. Like I have the family of my collaborators, and then, you know, I have my parents who've kind of gone along with me through this journey. And like I'm working on a story right now called The Obituary of a Small Town for the Montana Media Lab at the University of Montana School of Journalism. And I'm constantly like calling my parents and fact checking things or, you know, asking my dad like, yeah, like, is this a term that you would use? Like, is it a double clutch transmission? I think so. You know, like just double checking various language with him is super helpful.
Well, Megan, thank you so much. This has just been delightful.
It's been such a joy to talk to you, Russell. I really respect the work that you're doing and have loved listening to your show. So I'm really honored to be on yours.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to hearing more from you. You've been listening to 56 Counties. I'm your host, Russell Rowland. And I've been talking to Megan Torgerson, who is the host of an incredible podcast called... You can find Megan's podcast at reframingrural.org, and I encourage you to do so.